Welcome to the Eye Candy Duo podcast with me, Naomi Williams, a 30-something parent of none, baffled by how much is undiscussed in the world of pregnancy and parenthood. I'll be asking the questions you want the answers to on this podcast, which is brought to you by Eye Candy World, makers of beautifully British pushchairs for parents across the globe. We're delighted to be joined on the Eye Candy Duo podcast by Lola Jimenez, influencer, law student, and new solo mum-to-be. That's right, solo, not single mum-to-be. We caught up with Lola to hear about her journey to motherhood through IVF and her mission to normalise conversation and perceptions regarding taking on motherhood solo by choice. Hello, Lola, and thank you so much for coming on the Eye Candy Duo podcast. And how are you today?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
I see on Instagram that you're in the midst of a house move whilst being casually 21 weeks pregnant. How is that? How are you really?
Yes, I am. yes, I always had to move. I've house shared pretty much most of my adult life. And obviously now having the baby, I need somewhere to live with just me and my child and start our family. So I've just secured my next home. And so I'm one of those, being not in it, my nesting means lots of early packing and feeling prepared in that way. So that's what I'm doing at the moment. So yes, getting ready for a move, which is very exciting.
Oh, fantastic. Right. Yeah. New place, you know, new start for your new family, because your journey to motherhood is it's slightly different from what you might normally hear for a lot of people. And I always I find everybody's sort of individual journeys to parenthood fascinating. And I especially like it when people sort of break the status quo a little bit and create a new norm for themselves. And I think that you are a fantastic example of that. I mean, for our listeners, maybe just briefly explain why your parenthood journey is slightly different from the norm.
Yes, indeed. My journey is a little bit different from the norm because my child has been conceived through donor conception, so IVF of a sperm donor. And I'm doing it on my own. I decided to be a mother on my own. And there are actually a lot more women doing that than we realise until you start doing it and realising how many people out there have done the same thing. But it is fairly non-typical to do it under 35, I think, although it is increasing for women under 35 to be doing the same kind of thing.
Fantastic. I think you're a rock star for doing this, by the way, because I found you on Instagram, and we'll share all of your links and everything to your page in our show notes as well, so our listeners can kind of get connected with you there as well. And great. I sort of was going down, you know, the classic rabbit hole of Instagram one evening. and yeah, I just thought that's really cool. And especially, like you say, you know, it might be something that's more typical in terms of conversations and perceptions if you are, say, over the age of 35, because I suppose I really loathe kind of doing a stereotypical kind of view on people, but it might be, you know, something that you immediately think, maybe over 35, pushing 40, career driven, single woman, wakes up one day and goes, oh yeah, babies. Like, oh yeah, you know, do you know what I mean? You know, you kind of get that sort of idea in your head. And I think it's kind of...
Yeah, I mean, I always thought I had to wait till I was much older to do it as well, to be fair. You know, the assumption was that, oh, well, when I'm older, if I haven't met someone, and that older seemed to get closer and closer over the years.
So. It does. I'm a victim of that, the getting older every year thing. Oh, travesty. but I mean, what made you go for it at the age and at the time, I suppose, like regardless of age, for the timing, what was right about then for you to make this leap onto the journey that you were on?
So I had always known that I wanted to be a mum. In fact, if I'd met the right man and got married at 21, I probably would have done it then. But I got to 25 and sort of had some crappy dating experience, and then just thought, well, if I get to 35 and I'm still on my own, I'm going to do it by myself. I then entered a 7-year relationship which sort of I thought was going to turn into all my wildest dreams, you know, marriage, babies, the very traditional route of starting a family. And then we broke up 7 years later. So I were, well, in November 2019. And at that point, I just thought, do you know what? I don't have 7 years to do this again and maybe come out of this at 40 without a family, like when my body might not work or things might not be as easy to do it on your own. I just don't have that time to give. So I'll just do it now and figure out the husband thing later on. And that's pretty much the decision was made there and then. So that was like the November we broke up. By the January, I'd already been making doctor's appointments to try and, you know, assess my fertility. So so it was a very, very easy decision for me, really.
Because I do think, especially for, I mean, any woman of any age, I mean, we, you know, we all understand like the basic rules of conceiving, do you know what I mean?
And yes.
Potentially, like you say, like a donor or male's role in that in some capacity. But it does, you know, I feel your kind of almost your impatience of going, hang on a minute, I've got to have to, like, if I have a like for like scenario again, I, you know,
yes,
like, do I want to hang my hat on that? I actually, you have your own plans for your own life. Let's take over it.
Well, that's it. I mean, you know, I think a lot of people also mistake going solo into the motherhood journey as wanting to be single forever as well. So people are like, oh, but you're so young, you've got loads of time to meet someone. Yeah, but I actually don't know how long I've got eggs left for, you know. But the fact is, once you've, you know, I'm planning to be solo, not celibate forever. You know? I do want to have a family that looks more the way I grew up wanting it to look like. I just don't necessarily have forever to wait to get it started. So, you know, there is an assumption that doing it on your own means you don't ever want to settle down with anybody else or ever date or do any of that stuff. It's not quite like that.
Not at all. I mean, for anyone that's listening, they might think that, you know, obviously, because, you know, right, you're doing it on your own, let's get started. Was there any sort of resources that you found helpful or, you know, where's a good starting point for anybody that wants to just get on that path?
Yeah, so I actually found it a minefield. When I actually started the journey, it was really hard to compile information that was in date, that wasn't just stats to analyse. You know, every clinic says that they're the best in the country. you know, it's really, really hard to figure out. So I found Instagram itself very useful in terms of finding other people who've been through what I wanted to go through. So although I didn't find it particularly useful in finding where to go and sort of in terms of actual practical sort of help, I did find it interesting in finding out more about what the journey entailed. So people's stories, following what people were doing and when they were taking medication and that kind of thing. So it sort of helped me ask the right questions when I was in the room with the doctors and the nurses. Whereas before, I'd have just done whatever I was told without questioning anything. And because I didn't have a clue, this time I was like, oh, am I not meant to do this bit? You know, don't I have to do that too? You know, it was easier. So Instagram was a real support in the fact that I kind of had a better idea of what to expect. And I suppose that's also a lot of the reason why I set up my account, is because going into it, I didn't have a clue about any of the journey until I was at that stage. So when it came to choosing a donor, I didn't have really no, I thought I knew what it was until I got there and realized there were parts of that journey that actually I hadn't had a clue were a part of the journey. So I just wanted to sort of, you know, share with other people, because I suppose in a way that's the only resource really for me was Instagram.
Online,
so yeah. There weren't really like expert websites or like, you know, it's not like Compare the Market for IVF. I wish there was.
Yeah. Oh, but you're so right actually, because online conversations and online communities are an absolute blessing. If you're really trying to find something that's specific to you and your interests, it can be an absolute blessing. It can also be quite a fallback as well. And I'm sure, as much as you maybe get some lovely messages coming through that are really supportive of your journey, do you find you're getting negative comments? And actually, just to extend that as well, how did you find these conversations with your own family and close friends? Was there any, like, negative comments is probably not the right thing to say, but do you know what I mean? Any kind of like confusion or pullback or kind of confusion about what you were trying to achieve?
Sure. With my family specifically, I was very, very supported. everybody knew I wanted to be a mum. Everybody knew I'd been in a sort of on and off, rather toxic relationship for about 7 years. And they just knew that it was what I wanted. And it was all very much a, that's what you're going to do. No one's going to, you know, we're all here. We've got you. No one's going to tell you to do it. But if that's what you're going to do, we've all got your back. Which was great. In terms of my wider groups of friendships, there were a lot of comments, you know, like I said earlier, oh, but you're so young, or oh, you're so pretty, you have time to find someone, as if that was the only thing that was important, was finding someone. Mm-hmm. You know, as if, you know, and I've said this a million times, if I'd been a minger, people would have been more accepting of the situation. Well, she's never going to find someone, she might as well do it on her own, you know. But
yeah, no, I do understand that comment. Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, like there are some people in the world that have different circumstances and, you know, but, you know, just as if being looking a certain way meant whether something is okay or isn't okay. That was just the most bizarre way to decide whether my journey was right or not in my head.
Yeah.
You know, there are plenty of other factors that you could have chosen to decide. You know, maybe I should wait, but you went with what I look like or how young I am.
People are so like het up on convention. Like, it doesn't matter, you know, necessarily now about, you know, if you're a same sex couple or whatever, but, you know, to do this, you should really be with someone, or, you know, sometimes as well, like, you know, a woman is, you have to be, you know, are you truly successful unless you have a husband or a partner? It's always that kind of like those markers.
Yeah, absolutely. I even find now going through the hospital and doctor's appointments, for some reason, even though I tell them at every appointment, they always assume that there is a husband at home waiting for me. And I actually get really frustrated with that because, well, I won't go into too much detail, but I had a doctor fictionalise an entire scenario where I'd broken up with a partner recently and it was causing me real stress and anxiety, and we'd not actually even had a conversation about that. So that was very bizarre because I'd mentioned that I live with my best friend. So in her head, she had assumed that I was living with my best friend because I'd had a dreadful breakup since becoming pregnant, as if, you know, as if that I hadn't had any control of my situation at all. It was absolutely insane.
That's extraordinary. They actually felt the need to make up that, the kind of build a narrative around you to for almost them to feel more comfortable with your situation. That's insane.
Absolutely. And it's insane. And there are so many things like that, you know, and there are so many situations. But then I find that a lot. Like, so is there any dad? You know, people wonder if you're just, you've chosen the journey or if you've been left on the journey by yourself. There's never an assumption that you could potentially be strong and have decided to go into it on your own and do it this way. It's always the assumption that you've been left on your own.
But I mean, it's fantastic that you've had your family from the get-go be supportive. And like you say, you just mentioned your best friend as well. You know, it's not like you are stranded on a desert island doing this. You know, you have some incredible support.
I've absolutely loved living with my best friend while I've been pregnant. In fact, I don't know how I could have ever lived with a man whilst being pregnant. Women are so much more helpful. It's been fabulous doing it with my best friend.
And it's lovely to see as well. I loved your sort of your energy with this whole, with everything that you're going through as well, that you hosted a party with your friends to help you choose a sperm donor as well.
We did. I called it the Who's the Daddy party at the time, but really now I just refer to it as my sperm party.
It sounds kind of messy, but I like it. I mean, that must have been great fun, but obviously it's a really serious decision. I mean, how do you actually go about choosing your sperm donor? Like, what is the particular things that you wanted to look for? Because I think you actually, was it an American donor in the end that you went for?
Yes, that's right.
I mean, what's the difference? What's that whole area like to navigate?
So it is, it's rather complex at times. I had a very specific set of characteristics I was looking for. I originally went in with someone that was going to look just like me, so that my kid looked just like me, regardless of whether they look like their dad or not. And that's what I went into it thinking. There aren't that many blonde-haired, blue-eyed Mediterranean men that give sperm, as I've now discovered. But I'm quite an anomaly in my family. I'm the only blonde-haired, blue-eyed one. We have fairer members of the family. You know, well, my sister has blue eyes but has dark hair, but I'm the only one that actually looks like me. So I ended up looking at a wider sort of people that might look like my family. So at least the child looks like they belong to us, if not necessarily me specifically, because he is going to have me in him. So he's going to look a bit like me somewhere. But that in itself, that was a crazy journey. I mean, the reason I went to US donors is because you get different varying amounts of information depending on where you're looking. So in the UK, you don't get photos, certainly not with the London Sperm Bank. And there was also at the time a huge lack of choice in terms of some of my sort of non-negotiable characteristics. And then when you go to Europe, I think you get some pictures and some information. I think you only get their baby pictures and certain information. But when you go to the US, you get their baby pictures, their adult photos, you get voice clips of what they sound like. There was such a wider amount of information, and they readily gave up genetic information without you having to pay extra for it as well. And that was really important to me. So all these things I didn't actually think I had to take into account. So like donor genetics, I just thought, well, whoever's giving sperm, they must have checked that they're clean and safe and healthy. And, you know, I just assumed whoever I picked would have been fine. But actually, were they a genetic match to me? It's a minefield to navigate. It really is.
I mean, how long did that process take you then?
Choosing the donor? It took a while because I did originally land on a donor that I liked who did fit my blonde-haired, blue-eyed bill. But he actually went out of stock.
Out of stock. Brilliant.
Out of stock. So they actually had samples for him in the clinic or in the sperm bank. But they have to go back and do a second set of testing. So they give their sperm and they get all their checks done and their checks come back fine. And then they have to go back a certain amount of weeks later to make sure that that sample wouldn't have developed something over like sort of 6 weeks.
Oh, okay.
You know, like some things like hepatitis don't show for 6 weeks in a blood sample or something like that. But because he never went back to do his second set of tests, probably because we were in the middle of a lockdown, you know, so they just could never release it to the market. So effectively, they had no viable stock. And I just didn't know how long that wait was going to be. And then we'd found a family who wanted my eggs because I donated eggs as well, which meant that I had to really, really hurry up and pick a donor. So the whole process itself, it's hard to put a time limit on it, really, because you start looking before you're ready to buy, if that makes sense.
Right, okay.
You start sort of nosing around and seeing what's out there and looking at the different characteristics. But when it came from finding my donor and buying my donor, it all sort of happened in 48 hours.
Wow.
When I found the guy that I actually went with, which I'm really glad I did now. So,
oh, fantastic. I mean, and also, just to sort of touch on when you said about the egg donation side as well. So that's
yes.
Extraordinary. So you've also kind of put back into that community, if you will, to kind of, you know, donate by donating your eggs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's not a completely selfless thing to do. Because you do get subsidised treatment if you do donate your eggs. So it helped me make my dreams come true, hopefully making someone else's dreams come true in the process. But there's a very different feeling when that family actually got pregnant too. And I didn't realise how different it would feel. So when I got my pregnancy results, I was just so grateful. You know, I was just so overwhelmed and so grateful it had worked. And I was just completely, you know, it was just full gratitude for like a solid month of loving the world and loving everybody and karma's wonderful and all this stuff. Oh,
no.
But when I found out they were pregnant, it was pride. It was a very different sort of feeling. So it was more, I'm so proud they've got pregnant. I'm so proud I could help. Whereas when I was pregnant, I was so thankful I'd been allowed to get pregnant. It's a very weird contrast in feelings.
But it's a lovely sort of legacy to your journey as well, you know, to know, oh, brilliant, you know, like if they can feel even like a second of how thankful I've been feeling.
100%. 100%. I can only imagine they feel the way that I did when I got my, you know, my test result. And your whole life changes from that moment.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So I can imagine.
You're 20 weeks, is that right? Or 21 weeks into your
I'm 21 weeks. I will be 22 weeks on Friday. So, well, now we're speaking. I don't know when this airs, but now we're speaking. I'll be 22 weeks in 4 days.
Oh, fantastic step. So, yeah, you're kind of, it's happening. I mean, you've been so open.
Over the halfway mark now.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I mean, because you've been so open about your journey from starting the IVF process, like we've been just discussing, right through to, you know, literally where we're at today. And I've loved it. I've been poring over your stories. You're incredibly likable, by the way. Very approachable. So I really encourage anybody that's listening.
A bit sweary.
Yeah, but I like that. That's a piece of me. Do you know what I mean? There's no sort of fake or false illusion. You get, you know, what the lower you see, the lower you get. And I like that. I think that's, I think when you, especially when you're talking about these kind of topics, women, people, generally anybody on social are really savvy to what's like, you know, they know when they're being sold something or being spun a yarn, but they know real people as well. I mean, and also, I mean, this is an incredibly, you know, it's a personal private journey that you're going through. It's going to have ups. It's going to go down, you know, with some downs. You know, I really felt for you when the first flat didn't come through. You know, I really was just so, I was with you there. I was like, oh, I've been there. That's horrible when that happens. But was it important for you to share this journey? In like really with that hope that actually at some point someone, this will help someone?
For me, yes. Like I say, I went into it very, very blunt. I mean, probably my own fault for not spending long enough actually doing any reading before making the decision. But I went into it very blind about what to expect. A lot of it is also out of your control. So not knowing enough is hard as it is, but then having it out of your control and not really knowing is a very, very overwhelming situation. And for me, it was just really important to just help people make their decisions. But I really, not just in the journey itself, but making the decision to get there. You know, I've spoken to so many women now since sharing my journey. The amount of people that contact me saying they're considering solo motherhood and they don't know how to tell their families, or, you know, trying to justify to me why they want to do it, really as a sort of practice run to justify to the people in their lives. I mean, I've spoken to women who, and I've said this time and time again, educated adult women who are more comfortable telling their families they got pregnant from a one-night stand than telling their families they made decisions about what to do with their own body and actively made the choice to go and get pregnant in a clinic. And that blows my mind every time. Blows my mind.
It's ridiculous. That's sort of a direct reflection of society. It's just ridiculous that they should be feeling
it. It's insane. It's actually insane. Mm. Even when I started talking about my journey, people were like, why don't you just go to Spain for a holiday, have a good weekend? And I was like, or not. You know, if you've got the choice, that's not the way you choose.
No, but also it's an interesting way about the kind of the perceptions around like who owns a woman's body. Because it's like, so I could just do that. I give my body to someone, like some random stranger, or I could just, you know,
which is great for some people.
Of course, sorry, like no heavy judgment, but you know, no, I meant it more in the sense of like, well, you know, yeah, it's all about body ownership. If you want to do that, rock on. If you rather have that body ownership and go, no, I rather go this different route, that's kind of more of the positive, I guess, messaging, really.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was an active choice. You know, I wanted to be a mother. I decided I was going to be a mother on my own. You know, I have all the answers now, you see. When my son is born and he asks me, you know, about his dad or who his dad is, I don't know how I'm going to explain it yet. Probably, you know, say that he's got a seed daddy somewhere. But, I have the answers. I have the information. It's just, for me, it's cleaner. If he wants to go and find his dad, well, there are things in place that when he's 18, he can, and it doesn't affect me, and I'm not going to be upset because, you know, what you don't really get horrible people going out there and trying to help other people make families. But, you know, if it's a case of, well, let me find the man that you had a nice weekend with in Spain 20 years ago and go and find this bloke who might be quite unsavory, and who knows what we're going to find at the other end of that. You know, this is just very clean and I can still own the situation. There's no one knocking on the door on a Saturday night. Oh, it's my turn to have him. You know, it's very clean.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of, it's done you know, in your own way and how you want it. And I think that's just the most important message, isn't it? And I imagine probably a lot of the messaging you do get from women reaching out to you is probably just to have that extra reassurance as well. Just to be like, no,
yeah, I think so.
Stay at this.
I think so. I mean, I think it's just so important to have the conversations so that people are comfortable making their choices. You know, I speak to also a lot of women that have done it at 40 and really struggled and had to have more and more IVF and spend more and more of their savings, and who just say, I wish I'd done this 10 years ago. Yeah. I wish it was okay to say I wanted to do this 10 years ago.
But this is it. I think that's what's so courageous and important when you do, you know, the fact that you've just, you know, with your Instagram channel, you think, oh, you know, how much of a bigger impact can I make? But it's nice to share my journey with my followers. But it is, it's good. It's just getting that conversation normalised. And what today is like feels quite sort of like, wow, you know, good on you. That's, you know, you don't hear it every day. That's quite a break from the status quo. To hopefully, like you say, in another 10 years, it's, oh, you've got plenty. Like the options for what you want to do with your body is a lot more open and not so sort of heavily judged and guarded by others. I think that's the important thing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Just to kind of wrap up, because I cannot believe we've got 5 minutes left. I mean, the time
has flown.
But I mean, if you were going to give some advice to other women, you know, that are listening to this this podcast and kind of they're at the very start of their journey, who may want to have a baby on their own, what sort of like good, clear, simple steps would you suggest to them to help them on that path?
In terms of making the decision, because that is the hardest bit, my advice would be to just do it. You know, I spent a long time thinking about when was or wasn't right to have children. And actually, my circumstances may not be any different to what they are right now in 10 years' time. But does that mean I don't deserve to be a mum? No, it doesn't. It just means that life might just never get that much easier. But, you know, if it's what you want, you should just do it. But in terms of practicality, just make sure you question everything. I find, you know, at the clinics, there's also often an assumption that you're just going to do what you're told. But when you're given like a treatment plan or they tell you what's good for you, just make sure you understand why you're doing that and not something else. Make sure you actually understand what you're doing and ask questions all the way along, because they'll only give you as much information as you ask for. It's almost a bit lazy, I think, in the clinics, because they just assume, well, we know what we're doing, but you need to know what they're doing too. That would be my advice. And that also helps with sort of mentally processing what's going on for you, and have good friends around you. That would be my last bit of advice. Make sure you're surrounded by people. It's really tough. That's the only thing the main thing I will, if you know, even if you just wing it and go with it and do whatever the doctors say, have people around you, because it is not an easy journey.
No, brilliant advice. Thank you, Layla. It's been wonderful chatting with you, and thank you so much.
And we'll thank you.
You know, coming along with the journey with you and watching and just there to support whenever we can. And it's really wonderful to have you on and just to give something a little bit different, a little bit of a new dynamic to our podcast, to everybody that, you know, wants to be a parent. So I really appreciate you spending the time with us today.
Thank you so much.
To find out more information about the topics covered in today's podcast, head to the iCandy blog page on www.icandyworld.com/blog. You can also catch up on season one, featuring thought-provoking and engaging interviews from a mix of industry leaders, experts, celebrity parents, and healthcare specialists, all via your preferred podcast provider. If you enjoyed today's episode, then don't forget to leave a review and hit like and subscribe to ensure you never miss an episode. iCandy is a proud supporter of Great Ormond Street Children's Hospital charity. Every day brings new challenges at GOSH, and this extraordinary hospital depends on charitable support to give seriously ill children the best chance to fulfil their potential. A donation from as little as £10 could pay for a genetic test that will help diagnose sick children, whilst only £50 could cover the cost of one night stay for parents in GOSH's family accommodation. Every little bit helps support both children and parents alike in making a challenging time as comfortable as possible. If you would like to make a donation, please head to discover.org. iCandyWorld.com/gosh.